Amy, on this podcast, we try to always offer useful takeaways. And if you learn nothing else from us, learn this useful parenting lesson by Pampers Cruisers 360.
Pampers Cruisers 360 are the ultimate parent hack, the best diaper to use as soon as your baby starts standing or walking. Instead of ordinary diaper tabs, they have a unique 360-degree stretchy waistband that moves with your wild child.
Pampers Cruisers 360 makes it so easy to change your baby. Who probably doesn't stop moving just because they need a diaper changed? Just slide on to apply and away they go.
And fear not, parents. Pampers Cruisers 360 offers an up to 100% leak-free fit. And they just got even better with a new blowout barrier. Need we say more?
For trusted protection, trust Pampers, the number one pediatrician recommended brand. Download the Pampers Club app today and earn Pampers cash. Then redeem your Pampers cash for exclusive Pampers coupons, savings, and rewards.
Only redeemable via Pampers Club. Pampers cash has no cash value. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Fresh Take from What Fresh Hell, Laughing in the Face of Motherhood. This is Amy. Today, I'm talking to Nikki Wiener. She blends her experience as an educator, college admissions coach, and professional writer to support students and their families as they navigate the college admissions process. Nikki is the founder of Building Bold, and she has served as a guest speaker in the U.S. and abroad to share her expertise on writing and the college admissions landscape. Nikki's holistic approach is student-centered and provides students with the tools to thrive through the admission process and beyond to reach their full potential. Welcome, Nikki.
Thanks for having me, Amy. I'm excited to chat today.
I am very excited, too, because I just went through this process with my oldest. He's going to be a freshman in college this fall, and I have another one right behind who's going to start the process soon. I could not believe how different this was from when I applied, admittedly, a very long time ago. But the first thing I wanted to talk to, with you about was the sort of the changing climate of college admissions and sort of what's different now from when we, the people listening, might have applied.
One thing that's really interesting is we're operating in more of a digital landscape. So things as simple as social media can definitely play into this process. I always encourage my students just to be mindful of what they're posting. So simple things like that, that we might not be thinking about, are valuable, but also this digital age accelerating so fast is working in our students' favors as well, because colleges are able to share so much more information with them quicker and engage with them in a more robust way. We see virtual interviews happening, something we definitely weren't seeing 20 years ago. But I think that probably one thing our listeners might really be thinking about is acceptance rates and what they saw when they applied to college. Things have changed. The more competitive colleges have only gotten more competitive. And I think sometimes when I work with families, you know, that can be a shock. Harvard's 1995 freshman class had an admit rate of 11.8%. But last year's admit rate was 4.92%. So things, I mean, that's a given, Harvard.
That's going to be hard. Right, right.
Very competitive. But we're seeing that for all schools. And then I think the one other thing that really stands out for me is obviously standardized testing has changed a bit over the last 20 years. You know, there's two different tests. They've been around, but they're considered equally, the ACT, SAT. But the writing section is not as important. So that writing section becoming optional, I think, just puts more pressure on the essays that colleges ask students to write. It's not optional everywhere, but it's largely, you know, moving in that direction.
So you're talking about the SAT and ACT. There's an essay section, and kids can decide when they take it if they're going to take it with or without the essay. Is that correct?
Yeah. Some kids just feel, I don't want to sit for that extra time to do this essay. There's so much writing in the application. So that's interesting. It used to play a much bigger role. That could really bump a kid's score up.
Yeah.
So that's a fun little fact. And then I think that the digital applications have really spiked because the Common Application, which is one of the main platforms.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that, too. That's one of the reasons it's changed so much, is that there is the Common App. Can you tell us about that and how it works?
Yes. The Common App does not work with every single college or university, but it works with a lot, over 800 schools, and that changes daily. The Common App allows a student to fill out this main application portion that goes to every single college. Then each college can ask specific questions. So they could ask quirky questions. They could ask more literal questions. Why do you want to come to our school? So that hub allows kids now, as opposed to 20 years ago, to apply to many more schools and at a more rapid pace.
So if you can afford the admissions fee, you can just press send on one more school?
You can. And that increase, I would say, like over the past 20 years, NACAC, which is the National Association of College Admissions Counseling, estimates we see like 36% of applicants submitting 7 or more college applications.
How has COVID and the pandemic, has that increased the amount of applications even more? Because I kept seeing everywhere that applications were up 50% at this school or that school.
So amidst the test optional landscape this past year, we definitely saw an influx of applicants to the most selective schools. I think that, you know, that also, of course, resulted in a decrease in acceptances. You know, there were some anomalies in New York State schools. We saw a decrease in applications, but I think that it's more likely just this big influx, which we should see in this upcoming season as well, since we are still test optional for the vast majority of schools.
And what do you think about that? Do you think test optional is maybe here to stay?
Yeah, I think that it's certainly in conversation. One thing is that, you know, a lot of colleges were test optional before the pandemic. And I think that it's just made people more understand that process better, what doors it could open for students. But I think it's going to be a case-by-case basis. If there's a real learning curve for a lot of colleges and universities, they were not prepared for this. Whereas a lot of these schools that were already test optional before the pandemic, they had done their research. They'd learned how to evaluate a student effectively and holistically without the test scores. So I think right now it's going to be, well, what does that learning curve look like? And what do the results look like? We've got a lot of schools on 3-year pilots, and I think those results will start to inform kind of the direction. I personally do hope to see test optional continue in as many schools as possible.
If you have a kid who's applying to college in the next couple of years, if you were advising that student, what do you advise them in terms of submitting scores? Not, or is it just like, woohoo, no more tests? Or is it more complicated than that?
I have to say, I'm a little biased. I've always, you know, preferred the essays and things that can show character more. But for the test scores right now, I think colleges and myself are on the same page, is that if you are in the mid 50% of what, you know, the college looks for the ACT and SAT, you really should submit the test score, unless your score is going to bring down your academic profile. That's how I advised this past year. And, you know, we saw good results. There are schools, though, I will say, Amy, that do value scores more than others. And still, Northwestern was speaking on a podcast recently, and they said, you know, please do try to take that test. And I think Michigan, too, you know, I did not see great results for students without test scores. They're not ready fully to evaluate kids without scores yet.
You know, you were talking about the middle 50%. This is something that also didn't exist when I was applying to college, which is you can look online, you can look at their average ACT, SAT scores, and your student can, and kind of see, like, is this in the cards for me or not? In some ways, it's useful to sort of manage expectations, right? If you got a certain score on the ACT and the average admitted student at that college, it's 10 points higher. Like, okay, make sure you have some other schools on your list.
Yeah.
Does that go away as a useful metric if this becomes, if test optional continues? And does it just be more like everybody apply wherever you want?
If the test scores, at least right now, again, speaking of selective schools that have valued them, are still important. This word test optional can become a little complicated. My students who would submit test scores and would perform well have also performed well in school. Let's sort of, if I just back up for 1 minute, the transcript is the number one factor. So if that already is not up to par for the college or university, I don't think test scores can make up for that discrepancy of what the college is looking for and what the students showing. So that's one thing. However, maybe there's a student that has an impeccable transcript, taken all the APs that their school might offer or the most rigorous courses, or is just performing really well. And maybe they're just not a strong tester. In that case, I do think that metric of the test score may help them, or taking away that metric would possibly help them.
All right. I think this is a good time to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about the well-rounded student and how that's something else about the admissions process that has changed over the last decade or two. Margaret, exciting news. I am about to have a new baby nephew. And believe it or not, this will be my 13th nephew.
Amy, you're ready to give up your amateur status. You're a pro aunt at this point.
Our family has seen a lot of babies. And as soon as they start standing or walking, I send them all a whole lot of Pampers Cruisers 360.
Pampers Cruisers 360 don't have ordinary diaper tabs. Instead, they have a unique 360-degree stretchy waistband that moves with your newly mobile little one.
Pampers Cruisers 360 offer a gap-free fit that is up to 100% leak-proof, crucial once your baby is quite literally up and at 'em. And that gap-free fit helps prevent your baby from taking off their diaper, a habit you do not want them to get into.
You can say that again. And Pampers Cruisers 360 just got even better with a new blowout barrier. Need we even elaborate on the need for that, friends? For trusted protection, trust Pampers, the number one pediatrician recommended brand.
Download the Pampers Club app today and earn Pampers cash. Then redeem your Pampers cash for exclusive Pampers coupon savings and rewards.
Only redeemable via Pampers Club. Pampers cash has no cash value.
More and more, you hear about the importance of electrolytes as part of staying hydrated, because you need the sodium and the potassium, not just the water. And whether you're looking to hydrate during a workout, while traveling, or at the end of a long night, Sports Research Hydrate Electrolytes have got you covered with over 65 trace minerals, 7 essential vitamins, and coconut water powder.
Crisp and refreshing and without any sugar, this is hydration powered by Sports Research. They're little packets you can just grab and take with you to mix into your water bottle on the go. My favorite flavor so far, Amy, gotta be the cherry pomegranate.
Interesting. My high schooler likes the lemon lime, and she keeps a few handy in her backpack for days that she has practice after school. These electrolytes have the sodium and the potassium that you need to go with it in the optimal ratio for daily hydration.
Visit sportsresearch.com and use code WHATFRESH at checkout for 50% off your purchase of Hydrate.
That's Sports Research, SportsResearch, sportsresearch.com, and use code WHATFRESH for 50% off your Hydrate electrolytes order. Okay, we're back. We're talking to Nikki Weiner. She's the founder of Building Bold, that helps students apply to colleges and reach their futures as happy, well-adjusted adults who still speak to their parents after the college admissions process.
Yes, definitely.
Let's talk about the well-rounded thing, right? This is something else that was sort of understood as like, this is how you impress colleges. You sign up for every club, like Marsha Brady, right? You're the president of this, and you're on the swim team, and you're in the school play, and you're the class president, and you're this, and you volunteer, right? You do all of these things. That's how you impress colleges. Is that still the way in?
So it's not. Right now, we are, and we have been for some years, you know, for an extension of years, been operating in a landscape where, you know, what I like to call the well lopsided student is preferred. So that's the student who really leans into, maybe they're into fashion and sustainability. Thus, it could be sustainable fashion, like leans into that area, that focus area, and thus is impressive to colleges because they are doing just what us adults would be doing. We are leaning into our passions and the areas of focus. What definitely once was true, we just described that well-rounded student, is just confusing, I think, for colleges at this point. And even me as a coach, it's why do you have to do a little bit of community service, a little bit of chess club, a little bit of this? And what's really exciting is I think that this newer trend does enable us to see students at their best, because if they can find a passion point and lean into it, maybe they can have more joy throughout college and thus, you know, impress colleges more.
There are some kids, right, who are self-starters and who, I don't know, like they're, to use fashion as your example, like they're, you know, juniors in high school and they're applying to Project Runway and they know just what they want and they're chasing it. And then I think there's a lot more kids who are like, I don't really know what I like to do. I'm 16. I like a lot of things. And how do you help them sort of discern? Because it isn't just about getting into a good school, right? Like finding your passion and pursuing it in a specific way, it leads to a happier student as well. So how do you help them, a kid who might not really be able to discern so clearly, this is what I'm passionate about?
Yeah. So I think this is really important. I get students that will come to me and say, like, will this look good for colleges? Is this what colleges want to see? And I'll often shift them immediately from that, though it's, you know, valuable to consider. So for students that are a little bit less clear, and that's very normal, I would say more students are less clear than are clear on what they want to pursue in their extracurricular life. I think probing them with questions and thinking and trying things is important early on. Just trying something within community service that might bring them joy and purpose is valuable. This doesn't need to be their lifelong passion forever, but if they're making an impact in some way, it is helpful in this process and in their high school careers. So like this gradual trying of different things, like, did you like that? Did you not? Considering how reflecting on, you know, how a student feels in different activities is also important. And then I just think over time, asking a student to challenge themselves more, because I think that's where growth happens when we are uncomfortable and students are uncomfortable. So asking them to, you know, ask their teacher if they can do an independent project because they're into turtles and saving turtles in the sea somewhere. Like asking if they can do these things, the ask is really important. So if they're not sure, well, let's ask and find out more. That can be really interesting. And not every student needs to have the same extracurricular profile. So while we do value leadership, you know, making impacts on a local community and global level, you know, there might be a student that's doing something really meaningful on a smaller scale. And that can be just as important. Also, some students have different circumstances. They might have a lot of family responsibilities, and colleges recognize that. Just recently, that became part of the college application. So I think it's really taking it on a case-by-case basis and helping a student discover and not feel like they have to get to the end goal. Like, here's your extracurricular profile, here's your resume today. It will happen over time.
I heard this explained, this made a lot of sense to me, that the, you know, ideal applicant is a high school level expert at something that's of great interest to them, that the colleges aren't necessarily expecting everybody to be a published author, right? A Pulitzer Prize finalist, whatever. That's not really what we mean. We mean a high school level, I really love bees, and so I got my high school to install some, you know, aviaries on the roof, and because I think that we should care more about bumblebees, right? That they apply their passion in a way that changes the world that they're in, perhaps, right? We're not really saying like you need to get to the UN by sophomore year or forget it. It's about chasing something in a showing initiative and originality. Is that the right way to think of it?
Yeah, I think that that can be true for some students. Like that is, it really depends. Like there are students that absolutely are going to push and push and push and they'll be in Forbes.
Right.
And I work with those students, but I also work with the students that do something that shows an impact within their world. Yes, at 17 years old or 16, 15, I think it's students have a hard time tapping into that reality. Like they want to be in Forbes.
Right.
They want to be recognized as right. Uh-huh. But they have a harder time starting. And that starting of that B projects could totally be recognized in Forbes. Why not? That's awesome.
Yeah.
But I think students get way overwhelmed with the competition of like where they could be, what they heard students were doing. But I think you're right on, you have your finger on the pulse. It's about starting somewhere and that we don't know where that will grow, but it is really impressive that they can make that kind of impact, large and small.
Yeah, it's not about the end project. Like, what if I start this? What if this isn't good enough to get me into the school I've been thinking about? Like, that's not really why you're doing it. You're doing it because it's something you like. And that's why it can't be, look, kid, you're going to save the whales and you're going to like it or not. That is going to be your thing. You can't really, I feel like it must come across if it's not organic to the student.
Definitely. And then I think that it also has to be within the right context, as you're starting to allude to. You know, I do have students who, you know, their family is from Egypt and thus they spend their summers in Egypt with their family. So they started some healthcare project there. That makes sense within that context. It's not necessary for someone who does not have that same backstory to go out of their way to do something in a community that is unrelated to their backyard and starting in their backyard. But it really is case by case. And I love students to just step out of the how-tos and step into this is your path and this is how, let's see what's going on within your community. What little things, again, spark your interest. And I love the B example, how that can come to fruition.
Let's talk about the essay a little bit. I remember when I applied to college, my essay, I wrote it, you know, 2 hours before the application was due. And I mean, it was not a piece of writing I would have been proud of. And yet I went to a school that I was delighted with. Like you were saying before, the transcript is maybe the most important part of the college application. Is the essay like number two tied? Where would you put that in the picture?
Well, definitely right now. And if you know our listeners are listening during this year of the pandemic and admissions, it's definitely very high up there. The essay and letters of recommendation and extracurricular profile all tell part of the narrative and propel it forward. So it's definitely really important, especially when you're trying to gauge someone's intellectual curiosity, inquisitiveness, whatever that might be that the colleges are looking for that particular applicant. It's very important right now. One thing I come across every year is, you know, parents writing essays. And so what I try to tell my students is that not only can hurt you, but is so obvious. So when it is a 17-year-old who wrote the essay and it is showing intellectual curiosity and energy and whatever that person's story is, it can be really impactful. And it's very obvious, you know, some 17-year-olds write at a very different level than others. So, but there's just certain levels of reflectiveness when parents get involved. And I just have to say that every year, because I worry that parents aren't okay with what a 17-year-old can produce and showcase to colleges. And with that said, it is important to take time to, I guess, hook the reader as best as possible. I think one fun, well, maybe not so fun statistic is how long in really elite schools admissions officers spend on the application. And it's probably at highly competitive schools about 8 minutes or less reviewing an application. That doesn't mean it won't be re-reviewed, but it's very quick, the whole application. So getting that captivating story is maybe more important than when you or I applied. I definitely submitted my application at 11:59
right.
p.m. So to that end, it's a little bit more important now for sure as part of the review.
And is the essay sort of a like, here's me, here's 8 things about me, like here's the overview of what I'm all about? Or is it a deep dive on something really specific that isn't elsewhere in the application? What's the best way to look at it?
I think it depends on the applicant. So for me, I really prefer to see an entire applicant's profile. So that would mean even if I'm just going to help them on the essay, I want to see the transcript, the resume, etc., because I want to know how this essay could fit into the context of that. So it should definitely help to move the narrative forward. But it really, what does the student have to share? It depends. They have their resume, or what is the activity section, to tell about themselves. They have some supplemental essays for school specifics applications. I think it depends, though. Like if a student has a really important story to tell that has been shared in another part of their application, they might still need to share it in greater depth. But I think for the vast majority of students, I prefer an unconventional route or something that might not have been as expected for the direction it might go without trying too hard.
There's a blog, I'm going to put a link in the show notes. Tulane University's admissions counselor writes a great blog, so helpful about from the point of view of the person who's reading these hundreds and thousands of applications, like this is what we want. And he said something about like the great essay is the one that makes me want to like go down the hall and knock on my colleague's door. I'm like, you got to read this one.
Yes.
And because it's funny, it's sad, it's interesting, it's whatever, like the one that makes them go down the hall, that's the one that will, you know, come out. And it seems to me that some outside the box thinking might be required to get to that essay.
Yes. And then I think, and oh gosh, I love the Tulane, it's the Tulane Dean. I mean, he is, he has the greatest blog. So yes, definitely encourage our listeners to look at that. What I would say though, is there is a real reality of forcing it. So because I do so many of these essay brainstorms, I always am mindful of, I love the unconventional essays. Those are ones like I never show anyone. I just keep those to myself just so they never circulate anywhere. Who knows? But I love those so much. But the truth is that that's not everyone's way of thinking or engaging with the world. And that is okay. I think staying true in a way to oneself is important in the essay writing process. But if a student can go unconventional in any way, that's exciting. But again, I mean, I think the narrative that we're telling across the application is crucial. This may be the only opportunity that, you know, admissions can hear the student's voice or how they would speak to admissions. So I find it to be imperative that they don't get too quirky so that they're not saying anything of meaning or of depth.
Just like the project that they pick to do the deep dive on extracurricularly can't be picked based on how it will look to colleges, right? The essay, like,
yeah,
if you're trying to write with, will this get me in? Will this get me in? That's not the end goal. Oh, that is the end goal, but it's not where you start.
And then I almost feel a little bit hesitant saying this because I am such an unconventional essay coach. You know, I just always want to go for the unconventional topic, but look, if a student can do it and pull it off, we're going for it. So what I usually do, Amy, is I'll have them start unconventional. Then we'll pull back. We've always got safety land, and safety land is not always bad. It might just be the better portrayal of the student. Maybe it's slightly less exciting, but it might just be better for that application. But I always have them start with it. Like, you know, I had an essay brainstorm. I said, like, what about that tree outside your house? That's a very interesting tree. I keep seeing it. Can we talk about that tree? Just to see how will they respond to those questions? Sometimes I'll have students do a free write, but it does have to be true to the student. And then, I mean, I think that, again, we get these supplemental essays. Most colleges have them. They're short. They're succinct. Those essays should work sort of just, they should just congeal together. They should all work together with the personal statement to tell the student's story. And I can tell you, Amy, for a fact that it is my students that have the right essay combination that excites me, that I can remember, that do the best.
It's so complicated. And I want to take a break and come back and talk about another very important piece of this, which is the parent-child relationship and managing our own stress and our kids' stress as we walk through this together.
Are you overwhelmed by the things that get in the way of you doing what you want to do? Are you looking for ways to simplify life to better align with your values? Do you want to create space in your schedule so you have room for more of the good stuff? Play, joy, relationships, gratitude, and more? If you answered yes to any of these questions, I invite you to check out Edit Your Life, a podcast to help you edit the unnecessary from your life so you have more room to enjoy the awesome. Through episodes with me, Christine Coe, and a range of super smart, compassionate, and thoughtful guests, you'll come away with big picture insights and practical ways to declutter your home, schedule, and mental space without getting bogged down by perfection. I have always believed that small moments and actions matter tremendously. My goal is to help you find agency and space in your life through doable baby steps that will leave you feeling accomplished instead of overwhelmed. Check out Edit Your Life wherever you enjoy your podcasts.
Hey there, I'm Debbie Reber, the founder of Tilt Parenting and the author of the book Differently Wired. The mission of Tilt is to change the way neurodivergence, whether that's having a learning disability, having ADHD, being gifted, autistic, or some combination of all of the above, is perceived and experienced so differently wired kids and the parents like us raising them can truly thrive. On the Tilt Parenting podcast, I get to talk with authors, therapists, educators, and parenting experts who are committed to this mission. I ask the questions my listeners are most curious about when it comes to supporting our kids. And in turn, my guests share strategies for challenges, out-of-the-box ideas for navigating school, best practices for therapies, tips for advocating, and so many thoughtful insights on what it really takes to help our kids grow up feeling seen and respected so they can create awesome lives for themselves. I know that raising a differently wired kid can feel overwhelming and isolating, but I promise you, you are not alone, and it can feel so much better. If you're on this parenting journey, come listen to Tilt Parenting. Together, we can shift this paradigm and show up for our exceptional kids with hope, possibility, and joy.
Okay, we're back. We're talking to Nikki Wiener. She's the founder of Building Bold. Nikki, let's talk about the parent-child relationship and how we as parents can manage this. We come to this as our kids are applying with a lot of stress. Like, it is stressful having just gone through the spreadsheets, the deadlines. This school has 3 essays. This school has 4. This school needs the teachers to submit it, and this school needs you to submit it. It's so different. It's so many moving parts. And the outcomes seem so terribly important, even as you try to manage your expectations and your kids' expectations. What do you do to help the families that you work with through that sort of charged environment and keep everybody, you know, from throttling each other?
Yeah, well, I just want to honor that truth. Like, it is stressful. I have been in this world. I choose to do this every season. And it is a stressful world for myself. And having started this company and worked for other companies, I think part of our philosophy at Building Bold is definitely making it a moment of empowerment and growth, even in that discomfort. Because when students do go to college, they will not have their parents by their side or their guardians, whomever, you know, is raising them. And they will be faced with, you know, deadlines and stressors. And I actually think of this process as an opportunity to be better prepared for college. With that said, I think that some of the strategies, you know, I employ and, you know, with all of Building Bold, include expectation management to the point of, you know, what are we hoping for in terms of submission deadline? And what are we hoping for in terms of outcome in this very unpredictable admissions process? Like, it doesn't matter. There's a lot of companies that will say, we can get your kid admitted to an Ivy League school. I mean, that's not actually a fact. It's about thinking about the expectations, thinking about the parent, thinking about the child, and like, what are those distinct needs? Some parents are more nervous. They haven't been through this process in a really long time. They have information that might be 20 years old, and that's okay if it's there. They should. Why should they be keeping up with 20 years of information?
Right, right.
And so they might need a little extra attention from me as a coach or whomever, you know, the guidance counselor at their school. And that's okay. But I think it is our job as consultants to really support the family in understanding what's ahead and planning a process that works and reassuring the family of where we are each week or each month. For students, however, it's a little different. For me, the student is my number one priority. If the student is ever in harm's way, share something that's detrimental, of course, I'm going to share it with the family. But there is, you know, a reality of this is that I am almost like a sports coach. Like, I need that student to feel pushed and believe in the process. And this is not a process that every student is just understands what's involved. They get that there's essays and whatnot, but there's a lot more if you really want to assemble an A+ application. So to kind of round this out, I would say for parents, it's definitely expectation management, reassuring them of timelines, talking them through anecdotal information and how this is going to work out for their child and being proactive. For students, it's about forming that bond, making it somewhat fun where applicable, and empowering and pushing them. Otherwise, why are they working with me? They might as well, you know, just assemble these applications on their own. They may really want to be pushed, and it's my job to do just that.
Can we talk a little bit about, I know a lot of families, I mean, I live in New York City where, of course, everything's a little more intense. It's turned up to 11. And so there is a sort of, okay, my kid is going to do this. They're going to work hard. They're going to check all these boxes. And then they're going to get into one of these 6 schools. Okay, one of these 10 schools, right? And there are a lot of kids who really ran hard and had parents running hard and who the changing landscape left the kids disappointed because they weren't going to the school they thought they were going to go to, even though they're ending up going to a very good school. I want to address this because there's people listening from, you know, all over the place in all kinds of situations. How do you manage your own expectations? How do you suggest that parents manage their own expectations about, oh, I really want my kid to swim at this college, to go to this college I went to? How do we handle our feelings about that and encourage our kids while still protecting them from some of that maybe overly ambitious yearning?
It's a great question. So I think that part of this process is detaching a student's value from a college's decision. That's obvious. We read that everywhere. You know, you'll get that if you get a deferral letter, a rejection letter, like they'll tell you to do just that. So one is just a student's value is not a college's decision. That's just not. Mm-hmm. I think secondly, though, there is a place for every student. And I don't necessarily believe that the name of the school makes that place. So I think if a student and a family, and in particular parents, can expand their idea of what a successful collegiate experience might be, they can be more successful in the process and feel a little bit more at ease. What are our number 2 or 3 schools that we're considering, not just the top choice? I think there's some strategy that can help to ease that intense overwhelm about my student or my child is going to this school and going to swim at that school. The reality is that many schools that parents would like to see their students attend have very, very low admit rates. Mm-hmm. And the vast majority of students are thus rejected.
And P.S., I want to say part 2 of that is the school that you're like, well, they could always go to this school. Guess what? That school isn't so easy to get into anymore either. The elite schools have become, it's like the camel through the eye of the needle. And then the school that you're like, that's your safety. Not anymore. Everything's gotten a little bit harder to get into based on where it was 20 years ago, which doesn't mean it's impossible. It's just you need to reset your expectations early.
So in resetting those expectations, a balanced list is really key. I mean, the vast majority of my students are not ending up at their safety school, which could be a great school, if they create a balanced list, one that makes sense. Really going off of current information is valuable, whether it's through working with, you know, an independent consultant or your school, like current information. Did your school only admit a certain number of students to X school this past year? Do they admit someone every year? Do they admit 10 students? Like the real data. And then also, but again, having the different scenarios, it makes students really uncomfortable, but I do force them and their families to think about what would it look like if we didn't get accepted? Like, what would that look like? Because in life, there is rejection. I think this process is also a great first exposure to rejection. Like, even if you never experience rejection, you, in your mind, you might be running around with thoughts of I might be rejected or like I could be rejected. Oh, well, this other kid's applying. So like life has rejection. And this is merely just one experience that can mirror that, I guess, a bit.
Yeah.
So every year I get very nervous around, you know, admissions results coming out. And yes, I do have students that have reached very high and there's just no world where it's happening. But when it is a case of, I think this student deserves to be admitted, it's a really low admit rate, I try to remind the student and myself, like maybe even like a little note to the family, that I know the student's going to end up somewhere great because they've assembled a great application if they have. Like, that's a fact. And I remind the student and myself that we have done everything in our control. I think when you've done everything in your control truly, and sometimes you haven't, like sometimes a student hasn't, like they didn't work as hard as they could on the essay or they didn't work as hard in school. When they've really done everything, it is okay to surrender the process a little bit while feeling excitement. And at that point, I help students realize that, you know what, in a couple of years, you're going to be really happy on a campus. And you know what? I've had students just in the past year successfully transfer into the college they were once rejected from. And they were rejected 2 years ago through the process. I think this is a process of like grit, persistence, perseverance, and finding new outlooks on what success even looks like in the process.
It's a total crucible, but I will agree. My kid who just went through it, he seems so ready to go to college now. A great movie, like a great screenplay, is a hero making machine. And the things that happen to the hero during the movie are exactly the things that need to happen for that hero to become, you know, Harry Potter at the end or whatever. I feel like this college application process is the hero making machine that's made my kid ready to go to college and decide about classes and decide about life outcomes for himself in a totally new way. So I'm grateful, even after all the stress, that that he got to do it. Tell us about Building Bold and where we can find you, Nikki.
So Building Bold can be found at www.buildingboldstudents.com. We're on all social media platforms with the handle Building Bold. You know, I think my ultimate mission here, and as Building Bold continues to expand, is to really change the paradigm in the admissions landscape, to bring forth some more mindfulness, to bring forth a little bit more empowerment into a process that's really just riddled with, here's the Ivy League school, and that's everything. We are definitely on a mission to bring forth storytelling more across the entire application and bring forth a little bit more education on that process. And so I look forward to, on those platforms and, you know, on website, to sharing our real perspectives on this process that come from true anecdotal experience and a belief in really moving beyond what is conventional. There's a lot of conventions in this industry. And I think when we get outside of the box, we can make magic happen in this admissions world. So I look forward to connecting more on those social media platforms or the website.
Nikki, this was so helpful and so useful. And I hope that people feel empowered to help their students make good choices and submit great applications. And thanks for taking the time to talk to me.
Thank you so much, Amy. And just telling everyone, it will work out. And I'm excited to go through another season of this with many families.
Okay, good.
Everybody.
It's us, Blair and Molly, your old pals from Toddler Purgatory. Two moms who are also actors, who are also creative beings, who sometimes feel stuck.
And this is our new podcast, Unsticking It with Blair and Molly. What happens when your creative spark just seems to disappear? Gone.
Poof. Bye.
See ya. What happens when life gets in the way of your creativity instead of nourishing it? That's what happened to Molly and me. We felt like the thing that drove us creatively stopped working and impending doom had in fact impended.
Totally. So we decided to do something about it. And that was steal ideas about getting unstuck from the most creative people we can find. We talked to guests about how to break through the mucky, gluey, sticky wall that can get between you and your creativity. We hear about their journeys, their successes, their challenges, and even their bougie coffee shop orders.
And we're not just talking Bob Ross type paint on paper artists here, though we talk to them too. We're talking to actors, creative directors, dancers, and people who are working hard to be their best creative selves in a world that can sometimes feel real uncreative.
We all have something to teach each other, so let's steal their ideas together.
Join us, won't you, as we deep dive into how to unstick ourselves from the life gunk that can get in the way of our creative freedom. Pandemics, school calendars,
world events, lack of sleep. Oh, get out of their life gunk.
And let's get back to your best creative self. Subscribe to Unsticking It with Blair and Molly.
You're not going to want to miss an episode.
Unsticking It with Blair and Molly, because sometimes life sucks. Unsticking It.
Feel like you're the martyr in your family? You're not alone. Hey, this is Joanne.
And Brie.
And we're from the No Guilt Mom podcast. Brie, we talk to a lot of moms.
Yeah, we sure do.
And if you're a mom who has a to-do list that is so massive that you get overwhelmed and you shut down.
Or if you fall into the habit of doing everything for everyone and don't know how to change it, we can help you become a no-guilt mom.
We're going to take you from family martyr to family model. That's role model, so that you role model the behavior that you want to see out of your kids.
You're going to go from being tired and overwhelmed to energized and guilt-free.
Every week, you'll get actionable strategies that you can implement right away from the experts that we interview and from us.
We also have a whole lot of fun, so check out the No Guilt Mom podcast everywhere you listen to your favorite shows.